This is a short story I wrote on my walking treadmill on Sunday morning, and I want to share it here on my continued fiction offerings on the Ehrman Fred Penitential podcast. The short story is called Inoculation. After years of grad school, I found myself in terrible debt with few job prospects that would pay them off. This is the scam, I suppose. Being in debt for my PhD for the rest of my working life grew less and less attractive as I hustled to land a job with the state, to keep a job with the state, and then to hate my job with the state. The job I had was to be the licensed psychologist at the state home for disabled people, often the ones who had been signed over to the state for their care by their families. In grad school, I'd fantasized about being in private practice, listening to celebrities unfold their complexities of their lives with me. My wisdom would be so great, I'd be invited to parties with the understanding, of course, that I would pretend not to know them. I could listen to people about 3 hours a day until I ran out of emotional energy at the state hospital. Yes, I know I was a terrible counselor to these very needy people. After the 3 hours, I would look for hiding places around the facility. This became exhausting. Soon I found myself sitting in my car after only an hour of work, thumbing through printouts of available research jobs for recent PhD grads that paid handsomely. It was one of these mornings when I heard on the radio that two passenger jets had crashed into the Twin Towers. I went inside, and the whole facility was in an uproar of anxiety and fear. Even though we were far away in St. Louis, everyone there seemed to think the Arch would be the next target. I had to get away from this place, so I went out to my car and drove home. After 2 weeks of not coming in to the hospital, I got a letter and several missed phone calls telling me I was fired for not showing up. After several months of unemployment, day drinking, and a breakup I was too numb to care about, I realized I had to do something with what was left of my life. That was when I saw the ad for psychologists for the U.S. Army. Some latent patriotism combined with a need for a steady income, combined with the government's promise to pay off my loans, convinced me to call the recruiter. In a couple of weeks, I was in uniform. I was assigned to the sprawling Fort Hood, Texas, to work at a new unit that the medical command had just set up, the Soldier Resilience Center. Most of this was training young licensed counselors for how to deal with soldiers who had combat stress. It was a good gig, that is, until the U.S. invaded Iraq. A year into the Iraq invasion, we started getting statistics about the number of personnel rendered ineffective from PTSD. Suicide started to spike, and more stories started hitting the newsstands, calling this war a second Vietnam. Well, this got the general's attention, I suppose, which led to a bunch of them showing up at our resilience center to figure out what to do about it. My boss was sick the day they came in. She was a career Army psychiatrist who had seen it all. She knew how to talk to generals in a way that they would understand. I was the opposite. I'd never met a general in all my Army days. The enlisted soldiers had cleaned the whole facility the night before and were exhausted from staying out till midnight. I was the main man, so to speak, and I had my presentation ready about what we were going to do to help the troops in the field not go crazy from being in a brutal war. Easy, right? The generals blustered into the classroom where they were doing the briefing. They acted like they owned the place, and I suppose they did to some degree. I was nervous, but not too nervous, not as nervous as my PhD dissertation defense anyway. One of the generals had a Gatorade bottle full of tobacco spit, which he kept uncapped on the small desk. They were all in a hurry. 10 minutes into my presentation, the spit bottle general interrupted me and said, "This is bullshit. Pardon me, sir?" I couldn't remember if you called a general sir or general. "This is bullshit," he repeated. "None of this stuff is what our troops need." He didn't ask for any clarifying remarks from me, so I stayed silent. "It's bullshit because it isn't a medical problem. This is a moral problem. Have you read Jonathan Shea's new book, Achilles in Vietnam?" "No, sir, but I will," he cut me off. "Didn't think so. It's about Vietnam." "Duh," I thought. "I was in Vietnam," the spitbottle general continued, "and he describes it perfectly. He's a psychiatrist like you who got cancer." I wanted to point out the distinction between a psychiatrist, a medical doctor, and a psychologist, a scientist, therapist, but I had stopped explaining nuanced things to Army people after my first few frustrating months. If it wasn't in a three-letter acronym, they couldn't comprehend it. They even shortened people's last names if they had more than seven letters or two syllables. Sergeant Fitzgerald was Sergeant F. You can imagine what they did to names that didn't sound like a WASP American. Anyway, he got cancer and he was reading the Iliad, which I never heard of until I read this book. Apparently, there are parallels between what those ancient Greeks felt after battle and what our guys are feeling. He calls it moral injury, like they have a damaged morality. They don't feel good anymore. Anyway, it's not PTSD, folks. It's this other thing. That's what our boys are feeling. I wanted to point out that there were thousands of women serving in our military, including the head of this facility, but I didn't have the courage. The general spit once more into his bottle, capped it, and said, "Gentlemen, I want this young doctor to come up with an inoculation for moral injury so we can keep our people in the fight." The other generals then made some noises of approval, and several of them added their own two cents, one of them telling a very lengthy story about his time in Desert Storm that seemed quite unrelated to the topic at hand. He was the most senior general, so the others just had to listen. "You got that, doctor?" the general asked. "Yes, general," wondering if it was okay to use the title. He seemed pleased with me using his rank. After all, he was a general. Then they disappeared. I went out to my car and smoked a cigarette, staring at the Texas sky, wondering what I could do. I went straight to Barnes & Noble. I bought the book and read it by sunset. It was good, but the only solution I felt the book offered for this moral injury was to not do any war stuff. The book seemed to indicate that it was inevitable. I pulled out some of my textbooks from my first year of psychology. There was some stuff on moral formation, where morals come from, but I kept wondering how any of this would apply to a kid who just accidentally shot up a car full of kids because they wouldn't stop at a checkpoint. How did that shit not give someone moral injury? While I was thinking about this, I remembered a paper written by the acclaimed psychologist Albert Bandura of Stanford. His paper was about moral disengagement, how people do bad stuff and don't feel bad about it. He had posited that people often avoid moral injury and guilt a couple of different ways. The first is moral justification, euphemistic labeling, palliative comparison, displacement of responsibility, diffusion of responsibility, disregard or distortion of consequences, dehumanization, and attribution of blame. So, eight ways to do it. Eight ways to get rid of moral injury or to be inoculated against it. The Army, I knew, liked steps like this. If I could just make a catchword out of it, maybe MEPDA, something like that. Well, moral justification is like the greater purpose of this war justifies individual acts of bad stuff. Euphemistic labeling only refer to a combat death as someone getting waxed or something else. Palliative comparison. More people die from smoking in Iraq than from U.S. troops accidentally killing them. Displacement of responsibility. Individual soldiers can't be responsible for what they do since they were ordered to come over to Iraq by their superiors. Diffusion of responsibility. More people need to do the shooting, so no one person carries it all. Don't firing squads have like 10 men, one who is firing blanks? Disregard or distortion of consequences. An accidental death of a family in Iraq will not land anyone in jail. And then dehumanization. Call them ragheads, haji, and other terms that should be used exclusively instead of humans, people, boy, girl, man, woman. Attribution of blame. This is when you blame victims. They shouldn't have been at the checkpoint to begin with if they didn't want to become a pink mist and a memory or get waxed. I typed all this up with more illustrations and examples through the night. I emailed it at 6 a.m. The general emailed it back to me immediately. "Get on a plane for D.C. at once," he emailed. "My adjutant will work out the travel arrangements. Call him at this number." Well, I napped on the plane as much as I could in my stiff green polyester suit. No white lab coat for me, baby. I was a lean green moral injury inoculation machine. I reported to the general that afternoon at the Pentagon. Things were closing up for the day in the giant building. but the place still buzzed with activity. It had been designed before email, so a runner, a guy running, could be anywhere in the building in like minutes. Every time I saw a major walk by, I thought how that was like being a private here. The major makes the coffee. I was a mere captain, but I felt a thrill of excitement when I was whisked into his big office. The walls were covered up with plaques and awards. An even bigger Gatorade bottle, half full of black spit, was on his cluttered desk. As soon as I saluted, he popped up and said, "Follow me." We walked down hallway after hallway as fast as a human could possibly walk. I was sweating in my green polyester suit. He took us to a set of double doors guarded by military police. We entered and there was a giant table full of generals and men in suits. I guess they were politicians. They had just finished up the part of the briefing when they told the names of that day's Iraq and Afghanistan casualties. The chaplain had said a prayer and they had some silence. The general then introduced me. I noticed he didn't bring his Gatorade bottle to this meeting. "This young captain has a solution to the problem of moral injury, the suicides, the troops who can't fight anymore, folks. It's called MEPTA. And we can roll it out in a few weeks to everyone, everywhere." The rest was a blur. As I presented, someone suggested they make laminated leader cards to put on everyone's dog tags. Everyone nodded approvingly. Someone else said every unit needs to do classes. Someone suggested the chaplains lead them. The chaplain looked like a deer in the headlights. He was just a colonel and seemed intimidated, too intimidated to disagree or agree. "No," I piped up. "It needs to be the unit leaders. Chaplains don't understand how this stuff works. We don't want Sunday school lessons." I remember the last time I went to church. I was a kid, maybe 8 or 9. The story in Sunday school was Noah's flood from Genesis. They told the whole story without saying that God killed the entire planet in one big wave of water. No mention of it. He drowned everybody. I'd read the story at home before church. I asked the teacher about God drowning everyone and if that was right for God to do. I was told not to ask any more questions. So maybe those stories were supposed to inoculate kids to moral injury when really bad shit happens. And when we declaw the stories from their raw violence, we raise a bunch of adults who get moral injury in Iraq because they were taught to imagine a world without any violence. I snapped back in the briefing room. "No offense to the chaplains," I quipped, smiling a bit. "Their job is important and quite different from this one." That was it. They dismissed me. And a couple weeks later, our first sergeant handed me a little laminated card for my dog tags with MEPTA on it. I felt proud and a little unprofessional, knowing that troops all over the world were getting these tags. They were getting classes that I had developed on how to inoculate themselves from moral injury. I mean, if my dissertation committee knew I did this, they'd probably revoke my PhD. Oh well, they got their degrees before anyone needed $200,000 of debt to pay for it all.